Hey, this is Joel from PSI Screen Printing's T-Shirt Tycoons program, and we've got Jeff Thompson on the line with us. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Joel.
And he's going to tell us a bit about today about getting your stuff in stores, making your T-shirt brand succeed, and how to approach the stores and all that sort of thing. He's had a lot of experience in the industry over 20-odd years, but I'll get him to tell you a little bit of information on his history. So, Jeff, just tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've done, where you've been, your background and what you do now and all that sort of stuff.
Sure, mate, will do. I was with Billabong in the US for 8 years. I helped set up Billabong on the east coast of the United States from Maine to Florida, setting up all the salespeople and establishing account base for Billabong in that territory. Did that for eight
right.
years, and then I worked.
Yep.
That was an interesting time. Then I worked with.
How long ago was that?
That was in 82 to 90.
Yeah.
When surfwear was just starting to really get its act together. And really started to be recognised as a viable market.
Right.
After Billabong, I went to Rip Curl for 2 years in Florida, and from then I came back to Australia and took up a position as a New South Wales agent for Rip Curl for the next 12 years, from 94 right. till 2006, and. Saw the business grow there. I did all different categories. I did clothing, accessories, wetsuits, watches, and sold into all the major retailers and minor retailers in New South Wales for that period.
Right.
Again, started off as a one-man band, ended up with five reps and plus two sales support people and a reception, etc. In Sydney. Rip Curl then went in-house, and I didn't want to work under that type of criteria, so I left Rip Curl then and actually left New South Wales, moved to Queensland and took up a position with Gildan Activewear, or with actually Superior Activewear, who is the distributor for Gildan in Australia, as their Queensland
right.
agent, and again started the market for Gildan in Queensland. I've seen it develop over the last 5 years into quite a successful brand, and so that's putting in a nutshell, mate. That's my 25 odd years in the industry.
Cool. So basically, as your time as a rep, it would basically involve, especially in the as the New South Wales rep for Rip Curl there, you'd be maintaining accounts in stores, selling all the new ranges into the stores and maintaining relationships with the retailers and all of that sort of
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
Eh?
That was the whole idea. We also had a showroom and we had retailers coming to us, but we also went on the road and, you know, we were selling into the stores in-store as well. It got to the point
yep.
where the ranges were too big and we had to actually have hire hotel rooms to show the ranges because you just could not take them into store. They were just too big.
Right, so you make a big event out of it. So you'd put on a big thing in a hotel and invite all the
yep.
big wigs there and they'd come
Absolutely.
In and see what
and
you had.
Absolutely. And it's all about theatre as well. It's all, you
yeah.
know, it's all a show and trying to present your product in the best possible light and doing it in a professional way that
yeah.
you've got to show them the range and they're not to feel like they're wasting their time, but you know, with an established brand like Rip Curl, it's not that difficult to do.
Yeah, they've got all the advertising and the marketing.
Yeah, I mean,
they started in
73. Yeah, so I mean, they started off the same as any other new brand. They did just very clever about the way they did it, and they're very, very successful. Of course, timing is a lot, is very important in any industry, and their timing was impeccable, same as Billabong and same as Quiksilver, and that their timing into the market was
yeah.
the right time.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, in saying that, what would you say are the most important criteria for the success of a new T-shirt label? So, you know, the guys who are in the T-shirt Tycoons program, you know, they're either just starting out or they're, you know, had a few runs printed and they've got their T-shirts in a few stores and they just want to take it to the next level. You know, where should their heads be at? What they should they be looking to do to, you know, move it on that little bit?
Well, the first thing they really have to do is they have to have a unique selling point. It is a very competitive industry. And unless your brand is offering something to the retailer that they possibly don't already have or don't need or want, I mean, you're just wasting your time. And the other thing that's so important in this, in trying to grow your brand is you and this is probably a little dry and boring, but it's all about cash flow. As you grow, you will find that the monies that you're paying out don't always come back as quickly as you like. So it's very, very important that cash flow is right up there with building the brand. And there you go.
Yeah, that's one thing I found in the industry is it's a very the processes for payment in the industry are very drawn out. Like you'll often see stores, you're out selling your T-shirts, and you know it's not uncommon to have 90-day accounts and things like that, which exactly what you say makes it very difficult for, you know, someone just starting out to get their stuff in stores, because, you know, they've got to pay up front the screen printers like us to print all their gear, and yet they're waiting 90 days for payment from the retailers.
And it's interesting, it seems to be the smaller the retailer, the less chance you have of being paid on time. The larger the retailer, I mean, there may be criteria that you have to follow, but, you know, they'll pay you and you know you're going to get paid. But it's that gap between manufacturing the product, putting it in the store, and then waiting for your payment. That really is a tough time for anybody trying to build a brand.
Okay. Have you worked out any strategies or techniques for perhaps speeding up the payment process? Is there... I know the industry has its ways it does business, and it's very ingrained that it has that long credit sort of period before payment's due. Have you ever come across any techniques to shorten that period? So, for instance, offer a reduced wholesale price for someone who can pay within 14 days or something like that, so they get higher margin on the products, anything like that?
The one is you offer a discount for immediate payment. A COD payment, you offer another discount for 14 days payment, and you offer a discount for 30 days.
Okay, and how do you find, do people take those options up, or are they, is cash flow for them a little bit more important
than, you were at the mercy,
you know,
of the
profit margin initially?
Depending, and it also depends on his priorities as who he's going to pay first.
Yeah.
Of course, it's his established brands who get paid first, and it's the young blokes who are coming in who get paid last. And that's the name of the game, and always has been, always will be. There's not much you can do other than offering some incentives, such as I said. There's one thing I would never consider, and I might be jumping the gun here, but consignment. I think consignment is... It may appear to be a simplistic way of getting product into the store, but what it does, it gives no value to your brand. Retailer has no risk, and therefore has no financial interest in seeing it work. I think it's a partnership between you and the retailer, and that he has to have some of the risk involved, and that means actually buying your product and not just allowing him to, you know, giving you some space in your store. That's not a... it's an equal partnership.
Yeah, well, I was going to lead into that as the next question, but you got there, so that's cool. And just for those crew who don't know, I'm not sure where everyone's at, but consignment basically is where if you take your gear to a retailer and they go, oh, look, your stuff's good, but, you know, I probably can't buy it off you right now wholesale. What I'll do is I'll throw some on the shelf and I'll pay you as I sell it. That sort of setup, and that's where Jeff's saying it's probably not a great idea, even though it sounds good, like, oh, I'm getting my stuff in there and it's a foot in the door. It can just sit on the shelf forever. So that investment you've made in printing those shirts means okay, I've paid for these shirts, but this guy doesn't want to pay for them now. He's just going to stick them on the shelf and, you know, I know they're the best next thing, so they're going to sell. But in reality, they'll probably just collect dust on the shelf because, like Jeff said, he's got no skin in the game. There's no financial interest on him trying to sell those shirts or anything because, you know...
Absolutely, you have to have confidence in your brand.
So that's what you're getting at,
you can go in there with confidence to the retailer and go, no, I think this brand is good enough to sell and I'm sorry, I just can't do that. I just can't do consignment. It's it's a simplistic way of possibly getting your product into the store, but it does not mean it's going to sell.
Yeah. So not even an option at a much higher price. To the retailer, so you know, if your wholesale price was say $20 wholesale, is it not even worth it if you say, okay, I'll put them on consignment, but you know, the price is going to go up to $30?
I just know my experience with consignment stock over the years, there is no importance placed on it via a retailer. Got so many other things going on in his head, and your little consignment stock means nothing.
Okay. Yeah, cool. So you probably give it a miss unless it's, you know, uncle's store.
If you have a really good relationship
with
the retailer,
blood or something,
in any form, well, there's a possibility there. But just to walk into a retailer cold and offer consignment, I've never seen it work.
All right, cool. So let's move on to the next sort of thing is, how do you go about finding potential stockers? How do you go about creating a database of people you're going to approach to try and get your stuff in the stores? What's the best way? Do you just, you know, walk around your local area? Do you try and scout out the yellow pages?
Well,
do you buy lists
first
from somewhere?
You really have to recognize your market. What are you trying to achieve with the brand? Who are you trying to reach? And once you understand that about your brand and you know, what you're trying to do with it, then I think it narrows down exactly who you're going to be dealing with. And once you've done that, there's two channels that you can approach. There's the online stores and there's also the physical stores. Now, the online stores, they're probably a little easier to suss out. You just Google and find out, you know, who's selling T-shirts online. But the more traditional physical stores, that's a completely different story, and that is a very tough one to get into. But first things first, I think you've got to find your local retailer. I think you've just got to go and work your local retailers first and get your product into there and try to get a story together of how you're presenting it and how it's going to be presented in store with someone that you can, you know, build that story with. So that's how I would do it. I mean, once you've got that position there, then you go. Then you can use your online, your Google, or you know, this, and find out and just tell me, say, hey, well, say for example, Youth Fashion Retailers, Queensland, and you'll see there's a huge amount of retail stores on there. There's another way of doing it. There's also there's two trade shows. There's Fashion Exposed. Trade shows, one in Sydney and one in Melbourne, who offer an area in each of those for new and up-and-coming brands. You have to be accepted into it.
Yep.
So, again, it all comes back to recognising your market and understanding what your brand is and what you're trying to achieve with it and who you're trying to reach.
So just let me interrupt for a second. Those trade shows you're talking about, it's basically it's a massive sort of event where people have all different displays and that, and you pay to get your booth or your brand into that event, and potential buyers and retailers come
exactly
to check out the next big thing from all the different brands and labels.
March
is that right?
In Sydney. The other one I believe is in August or September in Melbourne. The March one in Sydney is the most important show.
Okay. And do they cater more towards, you know, your high-end runway fashion, or is it
it's
sort of across the board?
It's
from,
more mainstream,
you know,
than you'd expect,
motocross
actually.
Motocross right through to, you know, your high-end fashion.
I mean, none of the surf suppliers show there, nor do they really feel they need to. But you get a lot of retailers from all over the country who come to Sydney specifically to have a look and see what's coming up for the next season. And, you know, it's an opportunity. It'll cost you a little bit of money, but at least you'll be able to gauge what's going on there. And the other thing is you'll be surrounded by like-minded other brands, and you can gauge your own brand and presentation against the others, which is always important. No, it's industry only.
Can anyone attend them, or is it for industry only to attend? Yeah, I was just thinking it might be a good idea if someone was considering doing something like that, maybe go the year before.
If you know someone who's in retail,
you'd have to weasel your way in there somehow.
You can use the connections to possibly get a spot or to be able to get into the show. Rag Trader magazine is another good thing to gauge what's going on in the industry.
Yeah, cool.
It's bi-weekly, and you can find out pretty important things in there. And also they are. Sorry?
That's Rag Trader, RAGTRADER.
It's a print publication.
Yeah, cool.
There is an online
Is that a print publication or an online
just Google,
publication?
Rag Trader, and they're intrinsically involved with the Fashion Exposed shows.
Yeah, cool.
They have.
And so what sort of content does that magazine have? What sort of articles and stuff will it have in it?
Merchandising, and they have, what's up and coming as far as shows go. They also tell you about international shows. They have articles on suppliers and fabric suppliers, and even Gildan's been in there as well. About who they are, and where they came from, and there's a lot of people read that magazine. So you can even approach for editorial, and possibly they can do a story about you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you believe enough in your brand, it's certainly a good idea to even get in touch with them and tell them about yourself.
Yeah, and to do that, like just for you guys who are listening, what I would recommend if you saw a potential in that sort of thing is not approach them with, we're the greatest brand on earth, because we do this, and this, but the story behind how you came into being, and that's the way you've got to pitch it to them, is that the awesome story that brought you from this to this, and the story behind the whole thing. I'm sure they've got thousands of people out there trying to promote this stuff, but if you've got a newsworthy, solid story behind what you're doing and where you've come from and where you're going,
recognizing your market, understanding your brand and who you're trying to reach with it. And that's a fundamental question you should ask yourself every day.
Yeah, cool. All right.
So we just briefly, we sort of took a little bit of a thing there on the trade show and everything, but we're talking about finding potential stockers. So once we've narrowed down, okay, we talked about, you start by probably, beating your local pavement, your local stores, going and checking them out first. So once you've found a few stores that you are keen to approach, what do you think would be a step-by-step sort of method on how to approach those stores to get your stuff in there? Do you just walk in there with your gear and say, hey, I'm Joe Bloggs, this is my stuff, do you want some? Or do you give them a call and make an appointment? So, because I know business owners are very busy.
You have to make an appointment.
How would you go about initiating that first contact,
that
first meeting?
Just have a look at my brand. We think it suits your store. And remember, everything you say to them is all about their best, about the retailer's best interests. It's nothing about your best interests. It's about what you can give to the retailer and what they can make out of it. And that's what it's all about. So once you've called and made that appointment, and you get there, and you make sure you get there before time and on time.
Yep.
And sometimes, retailers won't even be there. They'll have forgotten. They're very busy people. And in that case, just make another appointment. But once you go in there, there's a few things you have to have. You have to have clean iron samples. You have to have cool graphics, a brand with a story, professional presentation, and what I think is probably one of the most important things there is, you have to have a great catalogue. And that means having cool pictures, succinct pictures with a story running through the whole catalogue, the story about your brand. You also, each of the samples that you have has to be hang tagged with the style numbers on them, and also the hang tags that you'll be the garments will be appearing in the store in. And you need to be very confident about what you're doing and who you sell and what you're trying to sell. Again, what are the next question, I suppose, is what are the stockists looking for? And they're looking for a unique selling proposition. What are you trying to sell them that can enhance their business and make them money? And having a good catalogue is a great thing to have, because once you leave the store and he's got that catalogue in his hand or her hand, that is what's going to continually sell your product, sell your brand. They can refer to it, it has to be easy to read, it has to be succinct. And the other thing that catalogue needs, it needs a place for retailers to place orders on. It needs a grid with sizes, colours, and month available. Something that they can either take out of the catalogue and then fax or scan an email to you, so that you both have a copy of the order. You have to make it as easy as possible for these retailers to do business with you. Yes, there you go, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Things would have been a bit different for you back when you were involved in the retail industry. Now you're more so involved in something a little bit different. But even things like how many Facebook followers you got, how many people you're getting to your website, all of that sort of thing can show a bit of social proof on, look, people are already into this stuff. By you putting it in your store, you can show them that, look, we've got all these Facebook followers, we've got all these Twitter followers, we've got all these people coming to our website.
Fantastic.
You know, people are proven to already be buying
anything
stuff,
that enhances
your
product, your brand,
from getting
to the retailer.
That sort of thing, you think,
of permanency as
is
well.
Useful.
They want to know that you're going to be there for the next 3 or 4 seasons or longer. That you're there for the long term. They don't want a fly by night. It's not interesting to them. They want to build. You have to build a relationship with them, and they want to build one with you because you're going to make them money, and that's what it's all about.
Do they want to something as, I guess, as in detail as maybe a brief sort of marketing plan that you have in place? Do they want to know that sort of stuff, or is that not something that they want to take their time up with?
It's all about the product. If the product is right, then you can back it up with good good marketing and good deliveries, et cetera. But it's all about the product.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how good a salesman you are or whatever. The product's not right, it's not going to work, it's not going to get in the store. So, again, it comes back to recognise your market, understand you have to have a unique selling proposition and something that people are going to want. It's about the product.
Okay, well, so I guess that's so we've started with our small independent local retailers. What if people, they have that already sort of down, they've got a few stockers. How do they go about approaching the big guys? How do they get their foot in the door? How do they know who to speak to? And if they do get someone who's the right person to speak to, how do they organise a meeting with them? Is it obviously with a smaller store, you probably walk in the door and you get a manager who's only one step from the actual owner who probably will sit down with you, but in a larger chain store like City Beach or Jetty Surf or something obviously it's going
to
be much more difficult to get to the buyers and try and get in there. What are your recommendations for that?
These larger retailers and department stores, is that it is a step forward, but it's also a step backwards, because it can alienate your existing retailers, especially small fashion boutique stores where they want to know that they have a fairly unique product. Once you start
entering into relationships with the large chains, the smaller retailers are going to go away from you because they'll move to the next thing that's coming through. You've crossed the line, you've gone into a different level. Now, once you've made that decision and you want to deal with the larger retailers, you have to be prepared to understand the criteria that they will do business with you if they want to do business with you. The best way to approach these guys, once you've made the decision that you wish to, is to call them and continue to call them and to email them and to just be on their case, you know, three or four times a week until at least you get an answer. What I've with these retailers, you know, the City Beaches and the Jetties, et cetera, is that their buyers are so damn busy that they find it very difficult to see any new brands. And the other thing is that, but the thing is that they're in a bit of a quandary because their job is to find the new brands that their customers are looking for. So they have to find the time to see these brands. At the same time, they don't have the time to see the brands because they're already dealing with existing ones. So it's just a matter of persistency and making sure that, you know, you have the patience to keep hunting them down until you get an appointment. Now, once you have that appointment and you go in and you show the brand, you may not get an order that first season. They may go, oh, look, come and see me next year. I'm already sold through. All my budget. I don't have any budget left for you. And all they're doing is just checking you out and just to make sure that, firstly, are you going to be around next season? It's a game, and you've got to be prepared to play the game. Now, once they've said yes, okay, we want to do a bit of business with you, you then enter a different world because what you're entering into is a very strict set of criteria that they want, and they won't do business with you unless you satisfy their criteria. And this criteria is quite interesting. It's a whole different mindset. What they want is a guaranteed margin, at least, you know, 60 to 65%. And that's a guarantee. That's not only guaranteed at normal retail, that's guaranteed margin when it goes on sale. So you may have to pay, you may have to rebate back to those guys the difference between what they sell it for and the guaranteed margins. You also have to give them rebates on various things. You can be for the staff to buy the stock, you have to give them a couple of percent. You have to give them, if you want to be paid within 30 days, well, to do that, you have to give them an additional, say, you know, percentage off. And if you want to be paid in 60 days, that percentage drop. If you want to be paid in 90 days, you don't pay it. So what they're doing is, it's the opposite of what we mentioned earlier about incentives to pay or to be paid. Delivery times. Pardon? Exactly. It's quite an interesting.
They charge you more to pay better.
Distribution allowances.
They charge you more to pay better.
Advertising subsidies. There's staff discounts. There's corporate support rebates. All these things that I have, you know, they go, what the hell is a corporate support rebate? Whatever it is, it's 1% and we must have it. And also delivery times. You have a delivery time into their warehouse, and it's not just, oh, this day, it is this hour that needs to be delivered between, say, 3 and 5 in the afternoon. If it's delivered at 5 after 5, they refuse it. They will not accept it. You have to pay freight that goes in. There is no freight discount. You can't charge them for freight. So before you even go to these guys, you've got to sit down and do your homework and understand what your margins are, what you're going to end up with yourself at the end of the day by dealing with these guys. So you may get some seriously big orders, but you start doing the mathematics and do the spreadsheets based on all the rebates, the guaranteed margins, the free delivery, and you'll find your margins are very, very small. But again, you're going to be getting large orders. Now, what happens is it sells first year, first season, fantastic. You go back second season, it doesn't sell that well. End of that second season, you're out the door.
Boy.
Well, that's very true. And the other thing is,
and you've invested a lot of money in getting all that stuff, you know, done for next season because you've anticipated the well wasn't going to run dry.
The rewards are fantastic. One, if you can sustain and be consistent with your sales in these in the larger stores, but you've got to understand it. It's nothing personal. It's just business. And if it doesn't work, you're gone. You're out. And they just move on to the next thing. So think long and hard about it. It definitely has advantages, as obviously you see all the fantastic brands that are in these stores. But at the same time, you've got to be aware of the risks.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, at the end of the day, it's volume and not profit. Other way around. It's profit and not volume that is going to keep you, you know, keep the bills paid and keep food on the table and all of that sort of thing. So you'd rather sell to a lot less stores and sell a lot less T-shirts at much, much higher margins than sell hundreds of thousands of T-shirts at ridiculously low margins. And in the end, you've got all this stress and all this massive overheads and all this work for very minute sort of profit at margin at the end of the day. So we take the capitalist ideals out of the way and
you're confident
say,
in your
well,
product and again, you recognise your market,
keep it small,
you
keep the margins down, we
brand
have to do
and
less
story
work
behind
more
it.
Money.
There is a possibility. There is definitely possibilities for those larger stores. It works, but you've just got to be really aware of the risks and the rewards that come with dealing with those guys. It is. And it all comes down to is the product, and secondly, it's your cash flow. Cash flow is key.
Make sure you plan for it as well, I guess. You know, when
you
it's happening, make sure you've got
the... You are chasing your tail. And what happens is when you're chasing cash flow all the time, you become reactive. You start to react to things rather than being proactive and actually working on your business. Reactive, you're working in your business. Proactive, you're working on your business.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to do, Jeff. That's good advice, and it's something when you're starting out, you know, as a young business person, you know, it's hard. You hear that all the time. You want to work on your business, not in your business, but doing it's another thing. And once you get there, and it's interesting, I've only recently got there over the last, you know, 6 months or so. So it's really interesting. And it's a challenge to get there, and it's even a challenge when you're there. But I fully agree and couldn't agree with it more that, you know, at the start, you need to be involved in everything. But as you progress and as you start building your business, you want to be getting as much assistance from people as possible that you're paying to do the stuff that you
Absolutely,
are doing
and,
so that it frees
crucial.
You up to do
and
the
you
stuff
find
you should
all the,
be doing,
all the
which
very
is,
successful
you know,
brands
the
doing
marketing,
exactly
the planning,
that. They understand they need
all of
people
that
to help them
and
grow the
business
while they can continually concentrate on their strengths, which is, again, the brand and what the story is and who you're trying to reach.
Yeah, because the interesting thing, a lot of the people listening to this, they might not necessarily be great business people. Through our history, we find a lot of guys who approach us, and girls, sorry. When I say guys, it's unisex, everyone. But basically, you know, a lot of the people who approach us to print their stuff and who want to start labels, you know, they're graphic designers and they're designers and they've got this passion for design. And a lot of time that doesn't transfer into having a passion for business and a mind for business success as well, because quite often, you know, the artistic sort of people aren't the business growing sort of people. So it's rounding yourself as well and being able to learn and do stuff that you perhaps don't care too much about, but if you're serious about making a go of it, it's something you have to get into and something you have to do. You might love the design and that's what you live for, but
if you really want to make a living out of this, there has to, the business stuff has to come into it as well. Or alternatively, maybe look for partners who are business minded, but then that opens a whole new can of worms, having, you know, business partners and stuff that can be more hassle than it's worth.
Before you even start to think about selling a product, you have to know what it's costing you to produce that product. And that's something that's... It's the old 80-20 rule. I mean, is 100% of people who are entering this industry, 80% will fail, and that 20% are the people who understand that there is a balance between creating a fantastic brand and graphics, etc., and actually running a business. And I would put 50-50 on the product, but also the behind the scenes and making sure that your business is running at a profit, and that the cash flow is the key.
Cool. All right. Well, we've sort of touched on it. And with the you mentioned it with the big guys we're talking about as far as pricing goes. So for pricing, let's forget about the big guys, because I don't know that the people, all your T-shirt tycoon crew, will be approaching the big guys straight away. Well, you might well be, so I don't want to, you know, talk it down. But let's say we're approaching, you know, your general stores, your local stores, you know, stores in your area stuff.
Well,
how do retailers price their stuff? How much do they want to pay from you?
Between, I believe, 105% and 120% markup. What margins do they want and all
that? Can you just take us through that?
It gives you margins around 55% to 65%. They don't really want to pay freight, and they don't want to do minimum orders. So what I would do when I'm going into a store is, okay, you can offer them. You've got to structure your costs around giving them at least, I reckon, 110% to 120% markup is a good way of firstly letting them listen to you, and secondly, immediately you put yourself into a positive light. Even more, if you can offer more, that's fantastic. But there's a couple of things that they don't like doing minimums, but you have to do a minimum. You can't just go in there and accept a $200 order. Minimum should be at least $500, because without having decent presence in the store, you get completely lost. When someone is ordering a T-shirt as well, I think you need to put a minimum per style that they can purchase, whether it be 6 units per style across any size break that they wish. You know, normally it's a small, medium, large, extra large, and they can just choose, you know, they might do a 1-2-2-1 scale or a 2-2-2 or a, you know, or whatever, 1-3-2. And also a minimum amount, and I reckon at least $500 at wholesale. and also free delivery for any orders over around $300 into store. And then on top of that, you also offer them, as we mentioned earlier, discount for paying early. COD, you get maybe, you know, 10%. 30 days or 14 days, you get 7%. 30 days, you get 5%. 60 days, you get nothing, you know. So it's a bit of a carrot in front of the retailer. Firstly, you've got to have enough faith and confidence in your brand that they can sell $500 worth of product at wholesale. You've got to have the presence in the store. You can't be scattered all over the store. And also the carrot is the free delivery. If they order all subsequent orders over the first initial order over $300 is freight free. Because if they're trying to order 1 or 2 units at a time from you, and you're paying the freight, I mean, there's all your profit gone. Yeah. And so you give them an incentive to say, oh, look, I only want, you know, they call you up, oh, look, you know, send me 5 more of these T-shirts. You go, look, if you order 10 shirts, it's free freight. Otherwise, I'll have to charge you freight. I mean, have confidence in your brand. You can get away with that. So that's how I would do it.
cool. What about negotiating things like merchandising and point of, or maybe not point
you
of
ask.
Sale stuff, but you know, in-store merchandising.
You ask them.
How do we work our way into that? Saying okay,
and then
you want
then you
to sell
offer
my
your services to come
I
in and do the
a
window
poster up. Poster in the window or a window display or something like that.
Yep.
I mean, the window is the eyes to the store. If you can get a window,
and are they
there,
pretty approachable and keen on that sort of stuff, or do they usually leave that to the big guys that they stock, or how do they usually?
A lot of the times they'll go, yeah, no problem. Or you can come in and help the person who's doing the merchandising, or you say, what's your schedule like for window? If you've got a merchandiser coming in doing your windows, when's the window going to change? And just be again confident and say, hey, look, we'd love to put, can we use our product in the window? Or, and also the other thing is when you go into store, once you've sold the product, the product is in store, you go in there and you tidy up your racks. You make sure they're all facing the right way, all your stock. You do a stock count, and you then go to the manager or the owner and say, hey, look, this is what you've sold. Can we replace these? And, oh, by the way, this is a new style that we're offering, et cetera. What about this one here? We found this has sold really well in other stores. We, put another six of these into your store as well. And just slowly build your business. It's going to happen over a long period. It's not going to be instant. You should call them and just say, hey, I'm going to come in and just do a quick... stock count and also...
And they're happy for you to just rock up and do that sort of stuff?
Yes,
or do you,
please
you make an appointment and let them know you're coming in?
That they're quite happy for reps to come in and do that type of thing.
Excellent. All right. I wanted to touch on the more... theoretical side of things, things like the seasons and things like that. Are they important? Do retailers care about the whole season thing? Is it something that the industry still does and will continue to do?
It's still very important. There's certain seasons that you have to recognise. There's summer, there's second summer, and there's winter. And at times there's also a second winter. As well. So, your summer season, which is mainly from deliveries in June through till December, you start selling those in February into store, and then that's for your indent business. The second summer, which is normally delivery from November, December, January, usually start selling that in June. And then your winter business, which of course is usually from March through till June, you start selling that in September. But what's happened over the last 5 years or so is that while there are those seasons are very, very important, what's going on is all the major brands are now doing what they call injection ranges every 6 weeks. So you've got your main... Of course, you've got your main three or four seasons that you're selling, which are really good because then if you're able to indent, once you can indent, you can then start planning because you know the orders that you have. You can then start. An indent is when you go in February with a range, which is that you've put together to go into store. To sell into store
hey,
for a
can
June
I interrupt you,
December,
Jeff, for a second?
December
can you explain indent?
So you're indenting future orders. So
basically, you've got some samples done up from us, and you've got just a very short run of each design done, and maybe one of each colorway, or maybe just a single colorway.
That's
and
what
then
it is, mate.
Graphical
and it's
representations
also,
of the other colorways.
For that summer,
and you go
delivery,
into the
you
store
have to have a
and you say, this is
catalog
next
ready
season,
to,
so you can get pre-orders so you know how many, how much to produce.
Plus all your samples.
That's the basic
and they've all got to be hung nicely, and they've all got to have hang tags, and they've all got to be facing the right way, and they've all got to be hung on really good hangers. You don't use plastic crappy hangers or wire ones. You go get yourself some nice wooden hangers. You also have a rolling rack if you can. You know, the you've seen the rolling racks? The fold-down rolling racks you throw in the back of your car and you put it up and then you hang all your samples. You go into store with that. You dress nicely. You've got some of the product on you. You go through the range and you say, hey, this shirt's available, you know, June through till September. This shirt's in these five colours or three colours or whatever you like in these sizes. This shirt's available the same period, or this shirt's now available. This shirt's available September onwards, and you present it. And once you've done that, you can either ask for the order then and there, which is always a great thing. 99% of no, I'd say 70% of the time it doesn't work, and that they'll go no, I'll write it later. But in that way, you've got to have an order form in your catalogue so that they have something to write on. But the catalogue, as I say, is very, very important. But and then every 6 weeks, once you've done that, so you've done your range in September for summer. Middle of March, you've then got another injection range for the winter, for that current season. So what I mean by injection range is it's instant orders. So you go in with styles. So you've got your, you've got your Indian orders, then you've got your injection ranges, which are for immediate delivery or within 30 days delivery. Preferably 30 days delivery, because then that gives you an opportunity to produce the product. Because if they want immediate delivery, that means you've already produced the product, which means guessing exactly what they're going to buy. And, mate, I still cannot work out what retailers will buy most of the time. Even though I've been in. Yes. Usually, six or eight pieces.
Is it a smaller range generally, injection range?
Every 6 weeks, you just go
injection
through
orders?
The product.
So you go.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, cool. And I was going to ask a question before.
What can happen is the catalogue.
They're the seasons, basically. Is there anything
really
else
cool
you'd like to add that we didn't
you
cover?
You know which ones are going to
sell. As
far
as the seasons and selling, you know, ahead of time and using it to produce
and then you
your
go out
stock
and you show all your retailers and you come back and go, well, you know, there's minimums that you have to do per style, and you find that a few of your shirts did not reach those minimums. Some people have ordered them, but not enough to reach minimums where it makes it viable for you to produce the product. And everybody goes through that, from the biggest brand to the smallest brand. And it's something that either you can find an alternative way of producing the stock, which is cost-effective, or you have to go back to the retailer and say, hey, we sold out. We sold out of the product before I got to you, you can always tell the truth and say, no, I'm sorry, we just don't sell enough of that product. Can we substitute it for a more successful style? And that most of the time works, you just have to work your way around it. It is a very complicated business creating a brand, because firstly, you have to be creative. You have to have great business sense. You also have to be a great salesman, and you have to be very, very organized. And that's the old 80-20 rule. Those 20% who do all those four things are the ones that are going to be successful. If you miss out on one of those, there is every chance that you will not be successful.
Yeah, cool. All right, so everything we've talked about has basically been assuming that the people who are doing the brands, the T-shirt tycoon guys themselves, are going to be going out doing this stuff. Now, what if they've listened to this and go, stuff that, this is all crazy too hard, I just want to design T-shirts and get a sales rep to go out and rep my stuff for me for a commission sale.
It's very hard to find a good sales rep.
First of all, when do you think that's a good step to make? And then how do you find a sales rep and what do you look for in a potential sales rep
to
go and sell stuff
to their customers? And to find one, a good one, well, firstly, what I would do is I would always look after your own area, even your own state yourself. If you decide to go interstate, that's when you start looking for sales reps or sales agents. If you decide to use one in your own home state, it's not an easy thing to find a good one. In fact, it's not an easy thing to find one. What's happened over the last 5 years is most of the agents who were agents have either gone in-house with brands where they are employed by the brand to represent the brand to the customers or have left the business. And the new and up-and-coming agents are out there and they're hungry and they want to know, they want the best brands to sell because it's all about, you know, it's all about that commission they receive from you. Most, just as an aside there, a minimum of 10% is a commission for an agent to sell, to make it his worthwhile. I mean, you can offer them 5%, but what are they going to sell? They're going to sell your product at 5% or another brand that they sell at 10% or 15%. So you really have to set those guidelines down before you even start, and they'll let you know what they want before they'll even look at you. Now, looking online, you can check in Rag Trader magazine, talk to retailers, find out who the best reps are, or the best agents are. You've got to find out, and once you may have found one, you've got to find out what brands are they currently selling. Are the brands compatible with what you're selling? Is it your market that they're selling into? It's not, you know, you're not trying to sell something into, they're working in one market and you're trying to get them to represent you into a different market. It just doesn't make sense. Those are the important things about an agent, and you have to be constantly in contact with them, weekly, and work with them, not against them. If there's issues with the brand, you don't cover your ears and say, oh no, it's not the brand, it's you. Obviously, you're not a good salesman. You have to listen to these guys because they are representing your brand in store, and they are a very important part of what you do. And without sales, you have nothing. And these guys will get that for you. There you go, mate.
Yeah, cool. Basically, I think we've covered everything,
just
Jeff.
Is
there anything that you feel that we haven't covered? You got any two cents that you'd like
to
put in? Just you've put probably $5 worth in, so that's cool. But is there anything else you'd like to, you know, just add to the whole thing that we perhaps haven't touched on?
Obviously, for the rewards, which can be very great. But it is a passion, and it is a constant 24/7 business, and it always will be. So if you're going to do this, go in with your eyes wide open and understand that the failure rate is very high, but once you succeed and once it happens for you, there's nothing quite like it. And on that note, I will finish.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks so much, Jeff. I mean, I appreciate your time, and I'm sure everyone who's listening you know, will fully appreciate everything, you know, that you've brought to the table today, because there's a bunch of stuff that you touched on that I had no idea about, and I've never been involved in the industry really at your end, but, you know, I learned a lot, and I'm sure all the crew learned a lot. You've answered a lot of questions that I've been getting from all the T-shirt Tycoon crew about things like pricing and positioning your brand and things like that. So, yeah thanks so much for your... for your time.
Anytime you
and
want to chat with me, mate, I'm
your
here.
Knowledge,
no problem at all.
Because a lot of crew keep that stuff bottled up and get funny with it. But, you know, I'm always stoked. I'm willing to talk to anyone about printing T-shirts. So thanks for...
No problem at all. Talk to you again, Joel. See you, mate.
And, yep.
No worries. All right. Thanks heaps, Jeff. Yeah, we'll be in touch very soon. I appreciate your time, mate. Thanks, Jeff.